Martin Ming here. It's my great pleasure to give a talk. So in this talk, I will introduce my recent work on this trilogy in Maurice Spilantis. So please feel free to ask me any questions during the talk. So most of the talk are from these two papers which are posted this year together with my advisor. So let me introduce my collaborators. They are all from MIT. So Center is my advisor. And Cecilia is a local postdoc at MIT who is a numerical expert. So most of the talk will be focused on the trilogy system. But I also did some work in bilogy system. And for this system, the theoretical work is done together with a younger student in my group, Demo. And on the experimental side, we are collaborating with Pablo's group on this system. So let me first introduce the motivation why I'm interested in this kind of system. So as you know, Maurice Spilantis is now very hot. It's a new topic. But my interest in it actually is from some very old problems. So it's from Couperet and Quantum Hall. I believe I don't need to give any introduction to this audience, but please allow me to have some comments for these two systems separately. So from Couperet, it's a three-decade problem. So we believe the lattice model is very simple. It's basically a square lattice Hubbard mod. We have a Hopi T and an unsigned Hubbard U. So this is probably the simplest model you can run down beyond the free Fermi level. But from this simple model, in experiments, they found many exotic phases, including this high-temperature superconductor. But more interestingly, they found some exotic matters, so the gap matter and the strange matter. So the status of the Couperet is that there is no theoretical agreement. People are even debating whether these physics are governed by a doped Mott insulator or not. And we are also curious whether these phases are some universal features of a Hubbard mod. For example, a Hubbard mod or triangular lattice. So to answer these kind of questions, we need another realization in another machinery of a doped mod insulator, of a Hubbard mod. It turns out it's very easy to realize the Hubbard mod. So we have a lot of examples. But for these materials, they are always at zero doping. So we only see the mod insulators. We don't know any way to dope it. So for the last several decades, I believe Couperet is the only example of doped mod insulator. And for the quantum Hall system, so the theory is much better. So we believe we have a good theory to describe this kind of exotic topological ordered states. So I think for this system, the real problem is how do we have more experimental control of anions? For example, to do quantum computation. So anion is very hard to control, especially in this kind of quantum Hall systems. So there are some proposals. Maybe we can trap the anion inside some vortex. If we can have a quantum Hall and superconductor hetero structure. But this is not possible for the conventional quantum Hall system because a large magnetic field is necessary and it will kill the superconductor. So to really have this kind of hetero structure, we really need a fractional quantum Hall states at zero magnetic field. So theoretically, this is of course possible, but it needs the following conditions. First, we need to have an almost flat chain band. And second, we need to tune the density. So it turns out the chain band may not be the hardest problem. There are many theoretical proposals for materials with a chain band. But the real problem is how do we dope it? So
in those experimental proposals, are the bands very flat?
They can be flat. But the problem is how do you dope it to be one-third filling?
Do you control the
flatness? I think it's just the property of the material.
Okay.
Just like the conventional solid state. So the problem is if you wanted to dope it, you cannot use chemical doping, because in chemical doping, you introduce a lot of disorders. And this will kill the fractional quantum Hall. I think the gate doping may be the only way to do this. So let me summarize. So from this kind of strongly correlated systems, we probably need some other materials which can have high contributibilities. So this is usually hard in conventional solid state material, because we cannot control it. In conventional material, the property is fixed by the material itself. So could atom was imagined to be a good Planck form? So for example, they can realize the fermionic hybrid model and then change the Hamiltonian. But the problem is now the temperature they can reach is very high. So if you change back the temperature to the scale of Couperet, so the temperature they can reach now is larger than 1000 K. So apparently they have some difficulty to access the really interesting regime unless there is another experimental breakthrough.
What would be the interesting regime?
So if you wanted to see superconductor, you need to be at under 100 K.
So K is Kelvin?
Yeah, Kelvin. So you need to reduce the temperature at least one under in this Kodo atom experiments. So this may take several years.
Is this the effective temperature? I mean, you are engineering your interactions there. So how do you define the temperature?
Oh, you define it as a ratio over the hopping. And here I just change it back to the scale we are interested in the Couperet. So the absolute value of temperature does not matter, apparently. Yeah, so in this year, there emerged another system, Maurice Planck's system. I believe it's kind of in between these two systems. So in this system, we can actually have a very good control, which I will show you explicitly later. And from this kind of superlattice system, it turns out the bandwidths and the interaction are at the order of 100 Kelvin. So in the experiment, they can reach the regime like at the order of 100 millikelvin. So I believe it's low enough to see superconduct. Actually, for some materials, they already saw superconduct. So before the cold atom breakthrough happened, this Maurice Planck may be a very good platform to study strongly correlated effects. So in this talk, I will focus only on one specific system. That's the ABC trilagography or hexagon or nitride. So this system was fabricated by Feng Wang. It's a group in Berkeley. So there is already an experimental paper posted in archive this March. So please allow me to delay the introduction of the details of this system to later slides. Here, I just wanted to give you a short summary. So in this system, they can control the potential difference between the top and the bottom layers. So this will give us a vertical electric field. So in my papers, I show that if we switch the vertical electric field from up to down, we can realize two completely different physics. So on one side, we can realize a triangular lattice hybrid mode. As you know, this is connected to the Couperet physics. But then if you switch the electric field, in experiment, this is very easy to do. Now we can realize the physics of some nearly flat chain bands. We have flat, yes.
The reference you quote for Feng and Wang at the top, that seems to be missing a digit of the archive serial number. Do you know what the missing digit is?
Really?
So you only have five digits after the dot, and there are only four.
Okay, I can check it later. Sorry for that. Sorry.
So what's going on at D equal to zero?
D equal to zero is a band cross.
Okay.
I will tell you the details later.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, so from this side, because it's some nearly flat chain band, so we probably will realize some states similar to quantum Hall. So this is actually makes this system very interesting, because we can realize two completely different strongly correlated physics. That's the band switch the vertical electric field within one sample.
So the system breaks time reversal essentially?
No, so it has two flat bands, three and minus three. They are degenerate, they are related by time reverse. So the system itself is time reverse invariant. Yeah, sorry for the archive number. I can show you later. Yeah, so first let me introduce the reciprocal lattice. So this actually has been studied for one decade in the ground field community. So basically, you can now have the ability to put one ground field layer on another ground field layer and twist it. So this can give us a more reciprocal lattice. So the idea is the following. So let's assume that we have two periodic lattices in two dimensions. So we have two layers with reciprocal vectors J1 and J2. So we assume they almost have the same magnitude. And then when we put these two layers together, so some interference will happen. And this will generate another lattice, which has a reciprocal vector J1 minus J2. So I define it as GM. So GM is a reciprocal vector for this reciprocal lattice. So it turns out this reciprocal lattice reciprocal vector can be much smaller than the original. This means this reciprocal lattice has a much larger lattice constant. So there are two ways to generate reciprocal lattice. So first, you assume your two layers are exactly the same, like you have the same ground field. So then you can twist them with some angle. And this will give you a difference between J1 and J2, and therefore a reciprocal lattice. And there is a second one to do that. So we put two layers with zero twist angle. So we align them, so there is no rotation. But we assume these two layers are different. So they have a slightly different lattice constant. And because of this, you can also generate a large reciprocal lattice. And in this talk, this ABC trilayer ground field HBN system actually belong to this second method. So the typical value we can get is the following. So the lattice constant of this reciprocal lattice is about 60 times larger than the original ground field lattice. So it's about 15 nanometers. That's quite large. So what makes this system interesting is that the strongly correlated effects actually can emerge. So usually, if you have a ground field, you never expect any interaction effects because the ground field has a very large bandwidth. It's at the order 10 eV. So strongly correlated effects are not very possible. But once you have this reciprocal lattice potential, it turns out you will fold your original band structure into a very small Brillouin zone. So your band structure, your bandwidth will be much smaller than the original value. And of course, your interaction will also decrease. So interaction is at the order 1 over AM. But if you do the calculation, you will find the bandwidth decreases faster. So then if the AM is large enough, we actually found that the bandwidth can be smaller than the interaction. That means this is a strongly correlated system in graphene.
So is this point that bandwidth decreases faster than the interaction is a generic statement?
I think it's a generic statement, but I don't have a proof. So the physics is actually very simple. So when you fold your band structure, you will open some gap in the Brillouin zone.
Right.
Because of this gap, you will push the bandwidth down. So that will reduce the bandwidth. That's the picture. But of course, it's material dependent. Yeah, so we were focused on just this system, which was done by Feng Wang. So here, so he has the ABC trilayer ground field. So I will introduce what is ABC trilayer ground field in the later slide. So here, we should just view this ABC trilayer ground field as a single object. And then they put two HB in on top and the bottom. And from each HB, it can rotate compared to the graph with a theta. So this means we can define two twist angles for the top HB and the bottom HB. So the experiment condition is the following. So the theta 1 is 0, theta 2 is very large. So only one HB on the top is aligned with the triangle. The other HB has a very large twist angle. So what does HB do? So that's the question. So HB, it also has a hexagon lattice, but it's a strong band instead. So it has a band gap at order EV. So it means when we consider electronic structures, so all of the electrons are coming from triangulation. So this HB is just a gap. You don't need to consider electrons inside the HB. So what's the effect of HB then? So the effect of HB is very simple. It just offers you a superlattice potential for electrons in the graph. So the superlattice potential is just like a CDW potential. But in this way, it's just externally controlled. And because of this superlattice potential, we need to fold the band for the graph. And then we find the strongly correlated effects emerge.
Can I ask you?
Sure.
So now the lattice, no, the new unit cell is much larger, 60 times.
Yeah, 60 times larger.
How does this unit cell, the length, linear size of this unit cell compared to the size of the sample?
So the sample is about 1,000 nanometers. So it's.
So you still have seven.
Several hundreds.
Several
hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yeah.
Thousand?
Yes. So this Maurice lattice, the lattice constant is about 15 nanometers. So then you have several thousand of nanometers. It means
several thousands.
Yeah, several thousand. Yeah.
Okay.
So
we still have a periodic structure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So, but in the bilayer, you also have a strongly correlated regime, right? Some hard feeling.
Yes. You mean the other material?
No, I'm just talking about the bilayer.
Bilayer graphene.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, perhaps I misunderstood. You said that the role of the third layer is to add a strongly correlated effect, but the bilayer graphene already have strong correlated.
So the bilayer graphene, you mean because it has a quadratic tangent? So from bilayer graphene, you have a quadratic tangent, so then you can have.
But you have a superconductor phase in bilayer graphene.
That's not just a bilayer graphene; it's a twisted bilayer graphene.
Twisted bilayer
graphene. Yeah, so that's another system. So the strongly correlated effects in that material is also from Maurice lattice. It's not just, you cannot get the superconductor just from a bilayer graph. You need to twist it.
Oh yeah, of course, and I was talking about that. So and now you have a third layer.
So this is an ABC triangulation. It's different from that material. This is a completely new material. And from this triangulation, you should view it as a single object. So this triangular graph itself does not have any twist.
Uh-huh. So what's the purpose of it?
Sorry?
And what is the purpose of that one?
What's the purpose?
Why do we?
So now you have the two, one on the top of the other, perfectly aligned, and then you twist the third one.
Yeah, so the third one, okay. The third one does not have too much effect. So they added it because of some experimental reasons. So that's my understanding. So they need some substrate, but it does not have effect on the band structure. Thanks. Yeah, so we need to study this strongly correlated system. So usually we need to do it in two steps. So the first steps, we need to derive some kind of low energy models. And then in the second step, we should solve these Langevin models. So I cannot solve the Langevin model. So this problem is left for engineers in the audience. So my focus on this talk is provide the Langevin model. So I will do band structure calculation and project cooling interaction. So the purpose is the following. I want to convince you that the Langevin model I provide is correct and interesting. And then if you wanted to study this problem, you don't need to care about the dirty details of the Maurice Valentis materials anymore. You can start from the Langevin model. So this is my main purpose of this talk. So first, let me calculate the band structure. So we write down Hamiltonian. It needs two terms. So first term is H0. It's the model for a single ABC transgraphy. And the second term is HM. So that's the Maurice Valentis potential. So in the next two slides, I will show you these two Hamiltonians separately. So for now, let's ignore this HBM. Let's just look at this ABC transgraphy. Let's understand the band structure of transgraphy first. So what is a transgraphy? So it consists of three monolayer graphies. But you need to stack it in a very specific way, which is called ABC stacking. So what does that mean? So for each monolayer graphy, you have two sublattices, A and B. So they are labeled as different colors here. So here, for example, for layer 1, I label the two sublattices as A1 and B1. So ABC stacking means that this B1 is always on top of A2, and B3 is always on top of A3. You can see it in this abstract plot. So then let's understand the band structure of this ABC transgraphy. So first, let's ignore the coupling. Let's ignore the interlayer coupling. Then we just have three monolayer graphy. Then the band structure is well known. You know, for each monolayer graphy, you have two Dirac codes and value k and k prime. So we will call these two values. So if we look at one value at k point, we have three Dirac codes. Because now we are in the decoupling limit. So let's stay here. At k point, we have three Dirac codes. Then we have six bands from these three Dirac codes. And now, so this is in the decoupling limit. And now we should add this gamma 1. So gamma 1 is about 400 MeV. It's from DFT estimation. So the effect of gamma 1 is it will gap out four bands, and only two bands will be left in the low energy. So the physics is very simple. So this gamma 1, in real space, it's just an offset term. And if you Fourier transform to momentum space, it does not have any momentum dependence. So the effect of gamma 1 is just to dimerize B1 and A2, and also dimerize B2 and A3. So it will push the bands of B1, A2, B2, A3 to a higher energy. You can see a gap here. So the gap is at the order gamma 1. So in this talk, we will focus on the energy scale about 30 MeV. So it's much smaller than this gap. So this means in the low energy, for each value, we only need to keep two bands. They are mainly formed by A1 and B3. So we need to derive a two-band model. So at zero order, there is no hopping between A1 and B3. But when we integrate these higher energy bands, we can generate some off-diagonal term, which is essentially a hopping between A1 and B3. So this term is very easy to understand. It's basically a third order perturbation. So you first hop from A1 to B1. But remember, now B1 and A2 are dimerized to one object. So you can continue the hopping to B2. And continue the hopping to B3. So with three hopping, you can have a hop between A1 and B3. And for each hopping, you have this term, T times Kx minus RK1. So this is a famous term for monolayer graphy at each Dirac code. And that's the reason why you see some cubic term here. That's from these three Hopi. Of course, you also need to add a denominator, which is gamma 1 squared. So that's the gap squared, because we are doing a third order perturbation. So this off-diagonal term is very easy to understand. There is an additional term, but let's ignore it. It does not change the physics qualitatively. So this is basically the low energy model for the ABC triangular graph at each valley. So basically in low energy, you have a band currency, which is cubic tangent. But in this material, in the experiment, they can also add a potential difference, delta V here. So remember that this two-band model is written as A1 and B3. So they are from different layers. So this means if you add a potential difference, you will give a mass term for these two bands. So this is different from monolayer graph. So for monolayer graph, the mass term corresponds to the energy difference between two sublattices. So experimentally, it's very hard to control the mass term for monolayer graph. But for ABC trilayer graph, we can control the mass term very easily. Let's change the potential difference.
So is it experimentally true that gamma is much larger than T?
It's not, but we are staying at a low energy. So the true energy scale you need to compare is T times Kx minus.
Okay.
So that is very simple.
So I presume there's some symmetry forbidding you from splitting that cubic touching.
Actually this second term was split.
Okay.
Yeah, but the total barrier phase is still. So let's ignore it. It's not that important. So is there any other questions before I go to the next slide? Sure.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
In the twisted bilayer, you will have A sites and B sites, for instance, right? You will have AA or BD or AB.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
And then you will have like a triangular lattice or a hexagonal lattice.
Yes, that's true.
There's been some argument about how many bands you have to use to describe the model, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And now here, you will also have some triangular lattice underlying there.
I will talk about it later.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So let me emphasize, this is not a twisted bilayer graph. This is a completely different material.
I agree. It's just because you are making a huge decision there of how many bands are you going to use.
Yeah, of course, I will talk about it later.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, so to do that, we need to add a Maury super lattice potential.
Mm-hmm.
So the Maury lattice potential is very simple. Here in the experiment, as I said, only the H-beam on the top is aligned. So we only need to consider the effect of this H-beam layer. So it will offer a super lattice potential for this trilayer graph. So basically on the first layer of the trilayer graph. So this super lattice potential is really like a CDW potential. It's a cosine term. But then we need to transform to momentum space. Then it just looks like a momentum transfer term. And here it only acts on the first layer. So this momentum transfer from J is just the reciprocal vector of the Maury super lattice. That's very small. So there are six vectors of this J. So they are related by C6 symmetry. So the order of magnitude is 1 over 60 of the original reciprocal vector of the graphene lattice. And if you look at this Hamiltonian, so it's really just the free electron approximation, which we learned in the solid state physics. So then everyone knows the effect. So the effect of this kind of term is it will fold the original bands to a very small Brillouin zone, which I call as a Maury Brillouin zone, MBZ. So it's also a Higgs bound. It's shown here. But it's much smaller than the original one. So of course, there is one subtlety here, because we have two valleys. So we need to fold the bands at this valley. And we need to also fold the bands at the other valley. So one question to ask is whether we can have intervalley scattering. But this turns out to be very small, because the term scatter k to k plus g. But remember, g is very, very small. It's 2 orders is smaller. So this means you just scatter k to k plus g, k plus g. There is a truncation. So you can never reach the other value if you start from the value here. It means when you fold these two values to the MBZ, you will form two separately bands. So the two values form separate bands. And this means when we can basically treat the value as an internal degree of freedom. So this is a key approximation in this kind of multiple lattice problems. But we believe it's a good approximation. Yeah, so we also move the...
This requires V naught to be smaller than... So you're using V as a perturbation here.
Yeah. I think the true condition is this. So this scattering, this momentum transfer is much, much smaller than the K minus K prime.
If V naught is large, then you will have...
Yeah, sure, but this V naught is... So you also need to compare V naught with this band width, right? So you wanted to scatter one particle to here, you must go up, right?
Oh, okay.
But this is at order, you see, 10 eV. But V naught is at 10 mEV.
I see.
So you can never do that. Okay, so we will move the band currency from two values to the gamma part of M. So in the MBZ, we will have two sets of bands. They are from two values. And we treat value as internal degree of freedom. It's just like a soda spin. So that's the starting point. So then we calculate the band structure numerically. So we actually calculate on both trilagography and bilagography HBM. So they are kind of similar. So here, this U is really just a delta V. So let's first assume delta V is equal to zero. As I showed you before, so at the gamma plot, you have the band currency for each value. So here it's the plot for one value. So you have a band currency between these conduction bands and the valence bands. But now, because delta V is just the potential difference, we can easily control it. We can increase it to the negative value and the positive value. So remember, this delta V is just the mass term. So then these two bands will be gapped out for both sides. And because of this gapping out, this band will be pushed down, like here. So you can see if you stay at the valence band, the bandwidth is reduced, but you increase the delta V. So this is actually interesting because you can tune the bandwidth by increasing delta V. It turns out it can do even better. It can even control the band topology. So the point is this delta V is really a mass term. So when you change the sign of the delta V, you change the sign of the mass term. That's really like a band inversion. So from Dirac code, if you change the sign of the mass term, you know the Chern number must be dropped by one. So here from trilagography, you have a cubic term like this. Your Chern number must be dropped by 3. So n is the number of layers at 3. This means these two sides, if we look at the valence bands, the Chern number of them cannot be both zero. So then we calculate the Chern number from each side numerically. So the value we get is 0 at this side and 3 at this side. So remember now we have two values. They are related by time reversal. This means, so here it's for one value, it's 3. So for the other value, it's just the minus 3. This means from trilagography HBM, we have two sides, and these two sides are related to different physics. So from one side, we have a narrow trivial band. And then if you put the interaction, you can imagine a Hubbard mode. For the other sides, you have some narrow Chern bands with Chern numbers 3 and minus 3. Then when you put the interaction, you cannot get a Hubbard mode. You probably will get some other physics, which I will talk about later. So in the following of the talk, So our focus is on this valence band. So we will treat this valence band as a separate band, which is isolated from the other bands. And these bands actually have four species, because we have both spin and valley. So we have four species, like this. So these four bands are the focus of this material. And everything emerged from these four bands.
So maybe you'll talk about this later, but are the trivial bands really trivial? Do you have one-year obstruction?
No, there is no one-year obstruction. So now let me show you the experimental result by Feng Wang. So I guess the archive number is still not correct.
I think the missing digit is a 5 off the end.
Oh, you mean here it's an end? Okay. Maybe it's just a hidden. Yeah, maybe I have it.
Consistently hidden if it is.
Yeah. So in this experiment, the sample it's still gated. It means you can add a voltage on top. That's called a VT. You can also add a voltage at the bottom. That's called a VB. So what does that mean? So this means VT plus VB, it controls the filling. So you can tune the filling continuously in this material. But you also have a VT minus VB. That's just the delta V, which I showed you before. That's the potential difference. It controls the bandwidth and the topology. Now let's look at this result. So this is a color map of the resistance. So first, let me define the filling. So here I define the filling nu t, which is equal to the number of holes per unit term, because we are focusing on the valence band, so I call it holes. But in this experimental paper, they use a different notation. So they define the filling as the filling of each species. So what I define is the filling of the total density. So there is a form factor here, and we have four species. So let's, if we go along this line, we are increasing the density. If we go along this line, we are changing the delta V. So now let's stay at this filling, one quarter and one over two, one half here. So it's the one quarter filling and one half filling of valence band. It means nu t equal to 1 and 2. So let's first say delta V is equal to 0. That's here. So here you can see the resistance is small. So this regime is actually a meter. And then you tune delta V from both directions. So you increase the magnitude of delta V. As I showed before, this will reduce the bandwidth. And then you enter into an insulating phase for both sides at both filling, one quarter and one half. So that corresponds to nu t equal to 1 and 2 per unit term. So this cannot be explained by a free fermion. So this must be a correlating insulate, which I will talk about later.
Time reversal is broken on one side?
From both sides, time reversal is not broken. That's the invariant. So we have a Chen band, but we have two valleys. They are related by time reversal. We don't know, right? Yeah. So they only see they only have the data of transport.
A hole, there's no hole measurement?
No. So they told us it's hard to measure how resistivity for some reasons which I don't understand.
So is this like two terminal resistance?
I think it's four terminal.
Okay. So they're measuring RxX?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so now because you also asked the two-step bibliography, so let me make a comparison. So as you may know it very well. So Pablo's group actually found another very amazing system. That's the twisted bilayer graphy. Basically, you put one monolayer graphy on another monolayer graphy, then you twist it. They found both correlated insulate and the superconduct. That's very interesting. However, so far there is no simple lattice model. And it seems a simple hybrid model is not very likely. So the reason is, if you look at this material, for each species, for each spin, each value, you need to keep at least two bands. And this makes the analysis very hard. So you cannot say it's hybrid model. It's not obviously related to hybrid model physics. It's probably some different physics, but we are not sure because we don't have a good model to study it. So compared to this material, a thick trilinear-graphy H-beam has some advantages. The first, in trilinear-graphy H-beam, both bandwidths and the topology can be gate-tuned. So in the twisted bilinear-graphy, you can also change the bandwidths by changing the twist angle, but that's hard because if you want to change the twist angle, you need to grow another sample. So this takes several weeks or maybe several months. But in trilinear-graphy, if we wanted to change the bandwidths, we just change the potential difference. This is so easy. And from trilinear-graphy H-beam, for each species, we only have one band. So the model is much simpler. And from one side, I will show you that the physics is just a hybrid model. So if you are interested in the cooperator-related physics, I believe this system is a better platform. Okay, so in the remaining of the talk, I will talk about these two sides separately because they are about different physics. But before that, I can show you the symmetry. So this is actually generically true for this material. And it may also true for, I think it's a general property of this Maurice Planitis. So let's look at the valence band. That's our focus. So we have four flavors coming from spin and value. So naively, you may expect a uniform symmetry. But it turns out that both connected term and interaction breaks it. So from the connected term, so here is a plot of Fermi surface for both values. So they are labeled as different colors. As you can see, two values have a different Fermi surface. So they are related by time reverse, but for each value, there is no time reverse. And the two values are not equivalent. This means you cannot make a rotation between two values. That's not a symmetry. So the only symmetry you have is U2 cross U2. So here U2 plus means you can make a SU2 rotation for each value. And you make a SU2 rotation for the value minus. You can do it separately. So this is still a approximating symmetry. So then it turned out the interaction symmetry, interaction will also break this uniform symmetry. So for interaction, we only consider the density-density interaction. It's basically the cooling interaction. But we wanted to project this cooling interaction to this valence band. So we wanted to write down the density operator, rho q, in terms of this ck. So ck is the creation operator for this band, for this valence band. It turns out you must include a form factor here. And this form factor contains the information of Berry connection. So because of this form factor, this uniform symmetry will also be broken down to U2 cross U2. It turns out that this symmetry is only approximate. So here, in the density operator, I only consider the small momentum transfer. But in this dot, dot, dot term, you can imagine there is a large momentum transfer. That's basically the scattering between two values. You know, when you scatter one value to the other value, it corresponds to a momentum transfer, 2k. So here, 2k is the momentum in the original large Brillouin zone. So it's really a large moment. And this interaction, if you work out it, you will find that it's essentially just the intervalue homes. So it just says the spin of these two values, they wanted to align with each other. But this GH is very small. The reason is here, you have a 2k here. It's a large momentum. So then it will suppress this term. It turns out this term is at the order 1% of this small momentum interaction. So you can say, so in some approximation, you can ignore this term. You can say you have U2 cross U2 symmetry. But if you include this term, you will only have U1 cross U1 cross SU2. So here U1C means the charge conservation. U1V means the value conservation. So So each value is separately conserved. But you cannot rotate the spin from both values separately. You only have a global SU2 spin rotation. And you also have a time reverse. So this is a good symmetry for this system.
So is it true that for all side Coulomb, you have to cross it?
Outside the Coulomb, outside the Hubbard, it has U4, of course.
Yeah, but the kinetic term breaks.
Yeah, connected term breaks.
Kinetic term plus one side Hubbard U has U2 cross.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So in the next part, I will show you the models for these both sides. So they are apparently different. So let's start from the trivial side. So it's kind of simple. So I will show you that it's just a Hubbard mode, spin value Hubbard mode. So remember, we are talking about the valence band. So the valence band, if you plot the density of this valence band, you will find that the density is concentrated all track Atlantis. And it turns out for this system, there is no one-year obstruction. We can have a localized one-year orbit. So there is some standard way to get a one-year orbit. Basically, you do some Fourier transform. So there is some standard way to do that. So I will not talk about details. So I did that. We indeed found a localized one-year orbit on these tracked Atlantis. This means we can run the Atlantis model now. So we don't need to work in the momentum space. It's too complicated. We can work in a lattice mode that can be much easier to solve.
So what's the difference from the bilayer?
So bilayer, you have two bands. That's the difference.
So I guess the question is, could have foreseen that in this case there's no one-year obstruction. In the bilayer case, you have some obstruction.
Yeah, you have a one-year obstruction.
So could have, is there a way to understand it just from the...
I think people understood it in a very subtle way. So it turns out from bibliography, you have two bands. So you may imagine you can have a two-orbiter model. It's still a lattice model. But it turns out this is not possible because there is something called frangial topology. So you cannot realize the band structure in a two-band mode. You need to have a five-band mode. So it's very complicated.
So general statement saying something like, for one band, you never have fragile topology?
I don't know. For one band, if you have a Chernobyl, of course, you have a one-year obstruction.
Sure.
But that's not a fragile.
If I have one band and no Chernobyl, let's say, is it obvious that you always have?
You can always have a one-year orbiter if you don't care about the symmetry. But sometimes, if you have some C3, some rotation symmetry,
right,
it can still have a one-year obstruction.
Okay.
But in this case, it's there is no such restriction. I checked all of this.
You don't have lattice rotation symmetry.
I have a C3 rotation.
C3.
Yeah, so for C3, we can do this.
I see.
Trying the lattice mode.
I see. So for this model, it happens that you don't have obstruction.
Yeah, yeah. That's our good news. Yeah. Fortunately. So let me show you the model. So it's just a triangular lattice spin value model. So the building block is a lattice operator. It has four flavors coming from value and spin. So A equal to plus and minus is value index. Sigma up and down is spin index. So you have at each side, you have four flavors. So that's the building block. And with these operators, you can run down the spin value Hubbard mode. So at the dominate order, you have a hopping term. And you have an offset. But there are some dot, dot, dot term here. So let me show you. So the first small term is an offset intervalue homes. I already introduced this term before. But it turns out there is another term. It's a nearest neighbor homes. So it's a ferromagnetic spin-spin coupling or the nearest neighbor bond. So both of these two terms are at the order 1% of Hubbard U. So of course, we also want to have some estimation of U. So for this, we need to know the dielectric trick constant. Because we have many higher bands. So these higher bands can screw the Coulomb interaction and renormalize your dielectric constant. Here, I make an assumption that the dielectric constant is 8. And after that, I can calculate the Hubble U. It's about 25 MeV. So let me show you some hopping. So remember, we have two values. So they are related by time reverse. And for each value, there is no time reverse. It means you can have some flux in it. So this system has a C3 symmetry. So it turns out if you only consider the nearest neighbor hopping, so the pattern is like this. So this is like a staggered flux for each value.
Why can't you have a total flux?
You cannot have...
Oh, you still have translation?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You cannot have a magnetic flux.
Okay.
So this flux is turned out to be not small. It's power to 2 pi. It's large. You can definitely not ignore it. So of course, after time reverse, these two values have the opposite flux. Opposite step flux. So that's the hopping term.
So how do you know the flux is around minus half pi?
Sorry?
How do you know? Oh,
I know the balance structure in momentum space.
Okay.
Now, I do Fourier transform. I know every hopping term. So it turns out you also need to introduce another synced neighbor hopping. So this is a plot. So they are at the same order. So you cannot ignore the synced hopping term. So here it's how this hopping changes with delta V. So when you increase the magnitude of delta V, as I said before, the hopping will become smaller. So here, I show a vertical line. So this is a Gardner line. So at here, the bandwidth is equal to the U. It's equal to 25 MeV. It means the metal insulator transition is probably happening here in this region. And then if you increase the delta V, you reduce the hopping, you reduce the bandwidth, then you go to a multi insulator phase. Any question? If not, I will go to the multi-insulate. Okay, so next turn, let me try to understand this multi-insulate. So the multi-insulator, so now because it's a hybrid mod, I can call it multi-insulate. So they find a multi-insulator at each site, nu t equal to 1 and 2. So let's first say, we are at the strong multi-insulator region. So remember, in this material, they can tune the bandwidth, so they can reach both regions. So in this regime, we know the charge is just frozen at each site. And then in low energy, we only have the spin value, neutral degree of freedom. That's an insulating phase. But then we want to understand the physics of this spin value. So then we do a standard T over U expansion. Get a J1, J2 spin value model. That's shown here. So you have a J1 coupling in the nearest neighbor and a J2 coupling in the second neighbor. So the SU4 is broken to U2 cross U2, as I said before.
So what's the difference between UT 1 and 2 in this case?
Oh, the Hilbert space are different. So,
so
for nu t equal to 1, as fundamental representation. For nu t equal to as SO6. So the physics must be different.
Sure.
Yeah, so there is another subtlety for this material. So usually, if you have a Hubbard mod, you expect the spin model is just the antiferromagnetic coupling because of this super exchange T square over U term. But in this material, it turns out there is another interside Hund's. So that's ferromagnetic coupling. So this interside Hund's, it's coming from a Kuhn interaction. It's about 1% of U. That's small. But the problem is that if you look at the super exchange, T square over U, so in the multi-insulate, usually you expect the T is at 10% of U, right? 0.1 U. Then T square over U, it's also 1% of U. This means the ferromagnetic coupling and the anti-ferromagnetic coupling, they are at the same order. So now it's quite subtle to compare them. So here is a plot of some estimation I did. But you may not should trust the quantitative thing. But here it's a quantitative illustration. So when the delta V is large, the magnitude is large, the bandwidth is very small. So then it's dominated by the ferromagnetic coupling. So then you have a ferromagnetic coupling J1. So it's negative here. The J2 is small. And then when you increase the bandwidth, you will find the super exchange beat the points that you can have anti-ferromagnetic coupling. So in this material, we can tilt between ferromagnetic and anti-ferromagnetic. So this means if you wanted to explain the experiments, you need to first ask which regime the experiment is in. Yeah, so we have a model. So then, of course, we should do some numerical simulations, like a DMRG. So we have DMRG experts here. So I will leave this problem to the experts. But in some special limit, we can actually solve the model. For example, if it's ferromagnetic, I can solve it exactly. So I will not talk about it. It's basically just a ferromagnetic. So for anti-ferromagnetic region, so we can tune it into the anti-ferromagnetic region. We cannot solve it here, so we need the DMRG. But
Sure. So in this spin model, it's like they are like spins really lying in the plane.
Sorry,
spins. What is the symmetry of the spins?
Spin has the SU2 symmetry. Spin has the SU2 symmetry, but for value, it does not have SU2.
Okay.
So it turns out, so I didn't say it before, but it turns out this value has a large orbital magnetic moment. So it can couple to an out-of-plane magnetic field. So it's like a Van-Lee-Zeeman coupling. So you have a G-factor here, like this. So I estimated this G-factor, it's at order 45. That's 20 times larger than the spin-Zeeman coupling. That's quite large. It means if you apply a very small out-of-plane magnetic field, 0.2 tesla, the Van-Lee splitting from this Zeeman term is about 0.4 MeV. It's at the same order of J. So then you can expect this value is going to be polarized because of this Van-Lee-Zeeman coupling. Then you can just have a spin 1/2 mode. And in this material, we can actually tune the ratio between J2 and J1. That's very nice. And it's even nicer because people already mapped out this phase diagram from DMRG. So I just show you the result. So it turns out on this spin 1/2 model, there is an intermediate spin liquid regime. So there is some evidence that this intermediate regime is a U1 Dirac spin liquid. So this means this material can potentially realize some kind of interesting spin liquid phases.
So this somehow the spin Zeeman is much smaller than the value?
For spin, the G is 2. That's 20 times smaller. You can ignore it.
Okay. Well, but I guess if you want to get a U1 Dirac spin liquid, that spin Zeeman is still relevant.
You really need it?
I guess it's relevant.
Yeah, it's relevant.
Probably the energy scale is too small.
I'm not sure if it's relevant, but.
Yeah, maybe we should
yeah.
Think of it more carefully.
Yeah.
So, yes, so it turns out this material is even more interesting. I think it's a perfect platform to study meta-instant transition. But now we can tune it, tune bandwidths. So we can, the experiment can have data on this meta-instant transition, which is tuned by bandwidths. So this is very good. So here I just show some possible scenarios for meta-instant transition. So if you have a buffer tight lattice, like a square lattice, usually you find some very boring scenario. Your meter just go to an anti-ferromagnetic meter. It's quite boring. But remember, now this model is actually a triangular lattice. It has frustration. So probably we can avoid this kind of boring scenario. We can have some more exotic transition. So actually, we can get some intuition from spin 1/2 model in triangular lattice. So there is some material called organics. So in organics, people believe it's described by a spin 1/2 model of triangular lattice. So people found some pressure-tuned continuous transition. And people believe it's continuous. And there is even some evidence that the first insulating phase is a quantum spin liquid. the U1 spin liquid with a neutral frame surface. So here, of course, I have a different mode. I have a spin value mode, not a spin 1/2 mode. But for spin value mode, you expect the quantum fluctuation is even stronger. It means the spin liquid phase is maybe even more likely. And then you probably will also have this kind of transition between matter and spin liquid. And if you cross this transition, the most natural phase you expect is actually a neutral frame surface. Of course, it's just a conjecture. We cannot prove it because we cannot solve it. And if it's a neutral Fermi surface, it's even not possible for numerics like DMRG. We cannot simulate a spinner Fermi surface. This means the only thing we can rely on is experimental phenomenology. So in the next slide, I will assume this is the case. And we show some predictions. And then the future experiments can test these predictions. How many? Oh, I see. How long can I have?
Maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah, I can speed up. Yeah, so if it's a continuous transition, there is a prediction by T-center. So it's just to say you can have a universal resistivity drop. So it's documented, so the future experiments can test it. So now let's go to the Chen side. So for this Chen side, so for triangular graphy, I show you that we can have Chen number 3 and minus 3. But in this paper, I actually found some other materials. So 1 and 2 are also possible. And these materials are time reverse invariant. It has two values with opposite Chen numbers. So at the free Fermi level, it's like a K-Mealy mode. You can realize the quantum value Hall effect. But we will focus on strongly correlated effects. And at integer nu t, correlated insulator have already been found. So here I just show you some results in the flat band limit on nu t equal to 1. So in this limit, we can map the model to a quantum Hall bilayer from opposite magnetic fields. Then we assume some quantum Hall ferromagnetism. Basically, we want to fill one band completely. But that, because the valley does not have SU2 symmetry, so this polarization of valley can be in both Z direction and in the X direction. So we did some Hartree-Fock calculation. In the flat band limit, the favored polarization is along Z direction. That means you fill the band of one valley completely. But this valley has a Chen number, so you realize a Chen insulate. So this means Chen insulator is favored at flat band limit, as confirmed by numerics. So one may also wonder, what happens when we go beyond the flat band limit? What happens in the intermediate regime? What happens in this matter insulator transition? We cannot answer this kind of question now, because we don't have a lattice mode. There is only obstruction. So this insulator cannot just be a conventional mode instead. Because charge cannot be frozen. There is no localized one orbit. It means the charge at spin must be integrated in some way. So we don't know the physics, because I think a completely new theoretical framework is needed. So let me give you some summary. So basically, we study triangular graphy on reciprocal lattice. We show there are two sides. For one side, it's Hubbard model physics. For the other side, it's some flat Chen band physics. And for future work, we wanted to go beyond the integer filling and look at the doped case, at the fractional filling for both sides. And motivated by this Chen side, so we have two opposite Chen numbers. It's really like a quantum Hall bilayers with the opposite magnetic fields. So I think so this kind of model itself is an interesting theoretical problem. And I even had a paper on it. So if you are interested, we can have more discussions later. So now let me stop here. Any questions? Thank you very much. Sure.
So if you consider like monolayer graphene twisted relative to boron nitride substrate, I guess there you would only be able to access the trivial side.
So that case is not a very, so let me show. So the point we can get both sides because we can have a band inversion.
Yeah.
That's because delta V is acting like a mass term.
Right.
For monolayer graphy, you don't have this control. Because in that case, the mass term is the energy difference between the two sublattices. In experiments, we cannot control it.
But even when it's on Born hydride with a relative twist, like you can't
anything there. No, I think it's a problem.
Just a
fault.
Yeah.
What if you have AB stacking instead of ABC?
AB.
Yeah. So here you actually show bilayer, right? The band structure of bilayer.
Oh, you mean this bilayer graph here?
Yeah.
You also have two sides. From one side, you have tree number 2 and minus 2.
Okay,
but from this, so if you wanted to reduce the bandwidth, you need a very large voltage. I'm not sure whether this is reachable in the experiments. So it's about the limitation for experiments.
I see.
Conceptually, it's very similar.
I see. Can you keep on stacking layers, like 4 layers, 5 layers?
I don't know. It depends on our experimental colleagues. It's not something I can do.
Okay.